Hey, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their process and their job. Two guests this week, and I think you're going to find this conversation really, really interesting. Jamie Little is a pit reporter for Fox NASCAR coverage. She works the NASCAR Cup Series and the NASCAR Xfinity Series. She's also a reporter for NASCAR Race Day, which is FS1's pre-race show. And prior to joining Fox, Jamie, as any racing fan knows, spent many, many years covering NASCAR for ESPN and ABC, as well as the IndyCar Series, Winter X Games, and Summer X Games as well. Our other guest is Shannon Spake. She joined Fox last July. She covers NASCAR, college football, college basketball, and the NFL for Fox. This month, she was named a co-host alongside Adam Alexander for FS1's NASCAR Race Hub. She also hosts NASCAR Race Day Xfinity, which basically occurs after that weekend's race. Jamie and Shannon are really good friends. They attended each other's wedding, and Shannon, I believe, was in Jamie's wedding, had an official role there. So we're talking about two people who not only have these really interesting jobs in NASCAR, but are longtime friends and obviously were longtime colleagues at ESPN and are now colleagues at Fox. I should mention Shannon was at ESPN for many, many years covering many different things, but primarily you knew her from NASCAR. So Jamie Little and Shannon Spake are the guests, and we examine many, many topics, including NASCAR's declining television ratings, what it's like to be a woman and, in a certain sense, pioneers in the sport, what it's like to be a pit reporter. And I'll ask them, too, about how do you prepare for the potential of covering death, which is certainly something Jamie Little had to do when Dan Weldon passed. This is a conversation I think you don't have to be a NASCAR fan to really find interesting. Jamie Little and Shannon Spake of Fox Sports, let's go to our conversation. All right, and as I said at the top, two guests on this week's Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Might even be the first NASCAR podcast I've done. I have to check back on the 104 episodes, but I think it is. And very happy to be joined by Jamie Little, who we will be speaking to. She is in Daytona right now. You know her, obviously, from Fox's NASCAR coverage, and prior to that, a longtime pit reporter for ESPN and ABC. Shannon Spake joined Fox very recently, July of 2016, covers NASCAR, college football, college basketball, and the NFL. And as I only learned thanks to a publicist, let me make sure I have this correct, that Shannon was in Jamie's wedding. Jamie was only a guest at Shannon's wedding. So they know each other very, very well. This is the first guest we've ever had who've been in each other's weddings. Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, Jamie Little and Shannon Spake.
Thank you. Glad to be on. Right. Jamie and I are used to being like the first women doing things. So yeah, it's cool to be here.
Yeah, pioneers for sure in that sport. All right, I want to... We're taping this on Tuesday, February 21st. People obviously listen to it afterwards. And as you both know, there was a piece today in the Wall Street Journal on NASCAR, and it cited issues with sponsorship dollars. But here's the big one. Since 2005, NASCAR's television viewership is down 45%. So I just want to start off with this because it's in the news. And I'll start with you, Jamie. As someone who obviously makes a living from NASCAR, how concerned are you about the drop at the moment in television viewership?
I think, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned about it. But I also know that that's something that we've been battling for years and years. And I think that other reporters from other sports would agree that we're all trying to work together to figure out how we can win over our viewership and keep it from going down and continually going down, because obviously the world is different and people get their news and they get their sports in different ways, mostly media or digital, on their phones, on their computers. And we're seeing that in the television ratings. And it is worrisome, I think, you know, in a sport that I love so much and I've worked so hard, devoted my whole career to. I don't like to see numbers like that, for sure.
Shannon, same question.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, Richard, I don't think it's just racing that this is happening to. I think sports across the board, people are getting their content in different ways, and they want it now. And NASCAR, we talk about it all the time, Jamie. I mean, the conversations in the garage all the time are about the length of the races, the length of the season, how we can make that better, how we can make it more viewer friendly. I don't think it's just racing, though, Richard. I think sports over, you know, across the board. I mean, we see the NFL. They had the perfect formula for so long, right? And now every time I feel like you turn on the TV during the NFL season, there's an NFL game. And so I just think that people are, you know, they're getting it all the time. And they're getting it from all different areas. You can watch it on the web. You can go back and watch highlights. You can fast forward through things. So it's certainly changing, and we have to figure out how to adapt, or else it could be, you know, could be problemsome.
Jamie, one of the things that's interesting about NASCAR, and we've had a number of people cover it through our history at Sports Illustrated, and for the most part, not absolute, but for the most part, they grew up a little bit in the sport. They if they didn't go to tracks as kids, they were following NASCAR for sure. When you were 21, you approached, make sure I'm correct about this, you approached a camera guy at ESPN who was working locally in, I guess, covering two-wheel racing, and you basically told that person that this is what you wanted to do. You grew up in racing. You wanted to be part of that world. One, is that correct on that story? And two, why did you want to get into the coverage of NASCAR when clearly there are far more opportunities in other sports just based on the number of jobs?
Yes. So part of your story is right. Exactly. When I was 21, I went up to an ESPN guy, cameraman, and I said, this is what I want to do. Can you help me? And what do I need to do? I was just like any young girl with, you know, bright eyes, and television just was my thing, and that's where I wanted to go. So that helped me. But the other part of it was I didn't grow up in racing. I was a product of a single mom raised without any siblings. I was just a tomboy. I rode horses and just did the normal things a girl did. But I always loved things with motors. I just always was attracted to that. And so when I graduated high school at 18, you know, I read my motorcycle magazines because I loved supercross racing and motocross. I had an affinity for dirt bikes. And when I'd read all these magazines, I would even take them to classes in high school, and people would make fun of me. But I would look and I'd think, man, there are no women representing me, a female fan. I want to change that. And from then on, I was literally 18. I said, this is what I'm going to do with my career, and I'm going to dedicate myself to it. And it didn't matter that another woman really hadn't done that before. I wanted to be that girl for all the fans of motorsport.
And Jamie, this was in Lake Tahoe. Is that where you grew up, or...
I grew up in Lake Tahoe, yes, and then I moved to Las Vegas when I was 14, and then moved, yeah, kind of all around after that.
Wow, Las Vegas at 14. That's a book waiting to happen.
Oh yeah, it was trouble.
Shannon, you just sort of based on your bio, it's not. First of all, I appreciate Jamie sort of telling me that she didn't necessarily grow up with, you know, with NASCAR and stuff like that. But you, Shannon, your bio is pretty traditional. You had sort of like either internships or first jobs at like CBS. You worked for The Early Show. You were a production assistant on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. You covered the Bobcats. I'm fairly certain I read that as well. So how does a person with a very traditional sort of sports/news background end up in NASCAR?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It seems traditional on paper, but it's funny. I think they're one of the reasons why Jamie and I have connected on so many different levels is because of our upbringing. We were both raised by single parents. She was raised in Las Vegas. I was raised in Fort Lauderdale, very fast-paced cities that we were forced to grow up very quickly. And I think for me personally, I was kind of lost through high school and college. And when I got out of college, literally packed up a U-Haul truck and moved to New York City, didn't know anybody, didn't have a job. And like Jamie walking up to somebody and saying, this is what I want to do, I rode elevators and handed out resumes and asked for, you know, weekly job postings and sent my resume to everything. So it was kind of like I took a lot of jumps to get to racing. But when ESPN called, eventually, you know, like you said, you just mentioned the Real Sports and the Early Show and all of those things I was able to do in New York. When ESPN finally called, I mean, obviously, if ESPN calls and they want to hire you, like, you jump at that opportunity. I mean, I was so green at that time. I remember it literally took me an hour to read four tracks because I just didn't know my voice and I didn't know what I was doing. And they hired me to do some of this racing stuff, to be on SportsCenter. I remember one of the guys at ESPN, when I went in for my interview, I interviewed with like 7 or 8 different people. And he looked at me in the interview and he said, "You were a intern or a broadcast associate for Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, you know, 2 years ago. How in the world did you get here and interviewing to be on air at ESPN?" And I just looked at him. I'm like, you know, I honestly, I don't know. But if I get the job, I'm going to work as hard as I can, you know, to do whatever I can do to grow and to get better. And so they gave, you know, they took a shot on me. And there I was, found myself in the NASCAR garage and didn't know a lot about the sport, learned it on the fly, learned it by talking to people, asking a lot of questions. And that paid off so much when I got into other sports, you know, like the NFL or like college basketball or like college football, after spending so much time in the garage. So I'm not afraid to ask the questions. I don't feel stupid walking up to a coach or to an SID or to a player and asking a question that may seem obvious to some people. And I learned that in the NASCAR garage.
That's interesting. Jamie, if you could follow up on that Shannon hit on, how does one go into NASCAR and learn about the sport, particularly if you're not somebody who grew up watching races every weekend?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Shannon and I have always said that I don't think there's a tougher job in television broadcasting, sports especially, than being a pit reporter for NASCAR. And I say that because, first of all, the schedule. Second of all, the amount of information and stats. We all know how stats go with football teams. But when you're a reporter, you know, I can't really speak for other sports because I haven't really covered those. But, you know, you have your set people that you're going to talk to, interview, and update throughout a game. Well, in NASCAR, you've got to be privy to all 40 drivers in the Cup Series. You know, we cover the Xfinity Series. You have to know all 40 of those drivers, and you have to be ready to update. You have to be able to interview them, to know what's happening, to be relevant. There's so much information. So to come in as a reporter that's never done racing before, good luck. It's tough. It's first of all, it's tough to fit in anything where you're the outsider and you didn't already have, you know, roots set in something. So to come in and make all those relationships, it's something that, you know, I'm proud of myself doing, but it's also all I ever wanted to do was be a pit reporter for racing and be part of that world. So those relationships mean the world, and you end up making a lot of friends out of it. But it wasn't easy. And thank God ESPN took me in the steps that they did. They put me on Supercross and Motocross, then IndyCar, and then moved me up to NASCAR, because I would have fallen flat on my face if I went straight to NASCAR.
Jamie, I'm going to stick with you on this, and then Shannon, I want you to answer this as well. And Jamie, you can take as long as you want, because this is always a question that especially young broadcasters or broadcast students or young journalists always want to hear. Starting with whatever day you first start to prepare, let's say it's the Monday or Tuesday after a race, can you take us through your preparation each week as to how you prepare to be a pit reporter for that upcoming race?
Yeah, well, I tell people it's not just a job. It's basically a lifestyle, because especially the way the media is now, I mean, things are breaking every day, and they're breaking on Twitter. They're breaking on, you know, Facebook, whatever it may be. You have to be so at the ready, and you have to be on top of those stories and what's happening. So on Monday, you know, you get home, you're getting things done in your real world and taking care of the kids and doing all that. But yet I'm checking Twitter 500 times a day, seeing what's happening, if anything's breaking news. Then I'm going on the websites, JSKI, Fox Sports, ESPN, and I'm reading articles and things that came out over the weekend, things that are happening. On Tuesday, we have our conference calls in the morning, one for the Xfinity Series, one for the Cup Series. You have to be ready. I always like to come prepared to those calls, because I like to bring something for us to look for, to cover, to dissect maybe in the upcoming weekend. So that's on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, you try to have some time with your family. But again, you're reading Twitter, you're going on the website, you're writing down notes. And then when I get on the plane on Thursday, I sit in my seat, and usually I have about a 4 to 5 hour flight, because I'm flying from Vegas to the races every weekend. I sit there, and that's when I take all my notes. I have my own stat guy that I have him do sheets on every driver for me. And then I write my own notes, you know, past notes from the past weekend or new things that I want to find out or ask or follow up on. So I compile all of those when I'm on the flight. And then once I land, you hit the ground running, and it's 3 to 4 straight days at the racetrack.
That's actually one day, Jamie, I'm going to email you to get some of those to see how your stat guy does that. That's pretty interesting. I'd actually like to see the visual on that.
It's something that I do it's something I do on the side. And, you know, all of us reporters, we all do things our own way, and we take in information, the way that we learn. And I'm very visual. So to have something on each driver so you're prepared if somebody drops out of a race, or God forbid somebody's in a big accident and you need to follow up with them, you've got something on them if they're a new face.
Shannon, you obviously had your own preparation when you were a pit reporter. Now you're co-hosting NASCAR Race Hub, which is, I'll give you a plug here, Monday through Thursday, I believe at 6 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. And then you are also hosting NASCAR Race Day Infinity, which is live from the track preceding each series race. So obviously the preparation is still going to be intense because you have a lot of hours that you have to log on air. But in the same way Jamie gave her answer, can you take us through your week, and maybe even if you want to, if there are differences now between preparing as a pit reporter versus preparing as a host?
Oh, well, you know, it's been a while since I've been in the pit. So, I mean, Jamie pretty much nailed it. The week is just consumed. And, you know, it's the same with college football. You're talking to players on the phone. You're talking to SIDs on the phone. You're having your conference calls. You're always reading stuff, trying to find clips, trying to find pictures, whatever you can use in the broadcast to kind of bring the story to the fans. I always get mad at myself if I walk away from a broadcast and I missed something, or you go back and read a story and you're like, man, I should have been able to tell this story in the game or in the race. But for me right now, you know, this is kind of new to me because this is just week two for me, right, in the hosting role. And so it started last week, and, you know, show up, but it doesn't start at noon when I get to the studio for my conference, my meeting. It starts at 5:15 in the morning when I get up and I have to get my little boys off to school. So, I mean, I'm getting them off to school and leaving the house about 6:15, trying to get a workout in, coming back, reading up on notes, looking through things like Jamie just said, checking Twitter to see if there's anything that we can use in the show that day. And then, you know, I get to the studio about 11:45. We have our meeting. And it's myself and Adam Alexander and a couple of producers. We go over the day. We usually finish that about 1 o'clock. Then we go into the studio to voice the tees, because that's sort of when you open the show, and there's a lot of video that needs to be laid down for that. So we want to get that to the producers as soon as possible so they can start working on that. And then I'll go and write. So we have an hour show, and this is all new territory for me. I hosted NASCAR Now at ESPN, but that was years ago. So this is, for me, it's learning this rundown and figuring out how each piece fits into the show and how it makes sense to me, how to make seamless transitions from an interview to a bump, which is when you throw to commercial break. And, you know, writing all of this stuff, I really enjoy that process. That's one of the reasons I was so excited about taking this job, is just to have that creative voice. So I finished writing probably about 2:30, 2:45, and then it's, for me, the dreaded hair and makeup. and I say that because it drives me crazy sitting in that chair for longer than an hour. I just feel like it's such a waste of time that I could be doing something more productive. But I get the hair and makeup done, and then I spend about 15, 20 minutes kind of going over my scripts again and going over the rundown again. And then we go into rehearse at 5 o'clock, and we run through it. It's been so interesting. We've had different producers each day, so they go one day on, one day off. So I have had different people in my ears. We've had different analysts in the studio each day. So it's all of these personalities that's brand new to me, and learning how to mesh with all these people. And meanwhile, that red light's on and you're live. So,
Shannon, is there any, you obviously have, you get the live game experience from college football and some other stuff, but you're not going to get it as much, obviously, from, compared to a pit job. Is there any part of you that's going to miss being, at least for NASCAR, live trackside versus being in the studio environment?
Yeah, there's something very intoxicating about that live event. Absolutely. I mean, and I've done it for such a long time, and you're part of this traveling group, this traveling family that you spend so much time with each other. I still will have a little bit of that because I'll be doing the pre-race show for the Xfinity series. It is obviously a little different. You're not down there with the athletes. You're not down there with the coaches. There's something to me so pure about the moment when, you know, in any sport, the flag to flag, or the time the whistle blows and the guys, and, you know, the end of the game. I always use this example, but Urban Meyer, when I would see him run his guys out of that tunnel And nothing else mattered except those guys and this game. And that's one thing that people always ask me about, you know, interviewing people and how do I handle it if it's a rough question or if somebody gets upset with me. And I'm like, I just need to, it's not about me. This is about them, and this is about their players or their driver, and this is about them doing their job. And you just have to realize that this is about, this is their, they're doing their job, I'm doing my job. But there's something to me so pure about that, and certainly we'll miss it. But I am so excited about this challenge because I feel like it's really taking me outside my comfort zone and pushing me to be better in a different area.
Jamie, understanding that you're going to have different relationships with different drivers, different crews chiefs, different owners, based on how long you know them, based on their own personalities. But as a general rule, or you can specify, but this is more of a generalized question for the moment. Over the course of your tenure as a reporter, how forthcoming have you found? Let's start with drivers, and then I'm going to go to crew chiefs, and then I'll go to owners.
I think pretty darn good. I mean, considering how often we're in their face, especially with a microphone, I think that that's the great part about my job is you're kind of there in the moment. That red light is on, as Shannon alluded to, and it's go time. And they are so honest and open because that's just the way the sport is. That's what they go through all the time. It's what they grew up watching and knowing that one of the best things about NASCAR is the access. And so that's why these guys want to give you their all. Whether it's good or bad, whatever happened in the car, they give it to you. Sure, there's some drivers that don't like that stuff. They don't like you to be in their face. You catch them at the wrong time. You use a word that triggers them. They go off, and you could look bad. That's happened to all of us. And unfortunately, it lives in YouTube forever. But we all had those moments. And there's crew chiefs, too. And I mean, there are crew chiefs that I'm sure there's like players or anybody else, but there's guys I really like and they're my go-to. I could go to them for any question I have. Even if I think it's the stupidest question, I can go to them for that and they'll be honest with me. And then there's other guys that it's like, oh, I bite my tongue and I have to go talk to them because I have to get the story and I have to cover them equally that day. So it definitely comes down to personalities, and you definitely have both ends of the spectrum, but for the most part, everybody is very accessible and very forthcoming in this sport.
Listen, I'm not going to ask you to sort of dish on anybody who's a pain in the ass, but I will ask you, who have you found to be, at least on the driver's side, historically over the years that you've been covering this, I mean, really forthcoming, or particularly, and I understand you work for rights holders. Your relationship with these guys is going to be different than, you know, if you're covering them for the Charlotte Observer. But understanding all that, what drivers for you, Jamie, have really, you think, gone over the top in terms of understanding that media accessibility ultimately helps them in connecting with the fans?
I think Brad Keselowski is one. I mean, he's just one of those guys. He thinks with his heart. He thinks with his mind. He's smart. He doesn't care if he makes people mad and pisses them off. He is always going to speak to you, speak his mind. He understands the relationship between his fans and television and that he has to use us as a tool, but also give us something to want to talk to him for. Carl Edwards was always one of those guys. He's one of those, when I say a go-to driver, he's that guy. He can wreck. He could have hit his head. He will get out of that car and he will talk to you with respect. He will give you an answer, something for you to take with you. And oh, by the way, he's going to plug three of his sponsors and you won't even hear it because it's so smooth.
Shannon, I'm not going to ask Jamie this. I'll ask you this, but how impressively savvy was Jamie not to lose a step when Kurt Busch, famously on YouTube now, as I saw yesterday, said, why the fuck do you think I'd be okay?
Well, I think, you know, with some drivers, you kind of brace yourself. I know that I have done that, not, you know, with several drivers. You kind of know that it can go in certain directions, like Jamie just said. I mean, that's not something Carl Edwards is going to say. But some drivers, you know, when they're walking out of the infield care center, if they got in a wreck. But listen, I mean, these guys got in a wreck. You know how mad you get when someone just cuts you off on the highway. And we are putting, you know, a mic in their face immediately after they lose a race, after they get in a wreck, after whatever. We don't see all the stuff that happens on that racetrack. So the emotions are raw. There's nothing like it. I mean, you're not going to do that in football. Maybe the coach, right? But you're not going to talk to the players immediately after they lose the national championship. They're going to go into the locker room. They're going to take some time. They're going to relax. or even after the Super Bowl. And so this sport is so different in that aspect. And like Jamie said, I mean, people being honest or people being, you know, coming at you, it's all about relationships, people telling you things. Like Jamie has spent so much time in this garage that she can walk into the 48 hauler whenever she wants to. And, you know, that's how it is with anybody who spends a lot of time in the garage. You can walk in there and you can ask Chad Knauss a question. And it's a trust level, too. Those guys trust her and those guys trust the people that are around the garage. But this sport is so unique. You spend, you know, 4 days with these people. And I remember there'd be some times where I'd see Jimmy or Jeff or whoever, I would see them more than maybe I saw my husband that week. And it's unlike any other sport.
And what I referenced goes back to 2011. It's a long time ago when Jamie was at ESPN. But as Jamie said, it lives on YouTube forever. And Jamie, I'll give you an update. It's now 421,000 views for that. So it will be there for eternity.
We love you too, don't we, Jamie?
The fight. I'd rather people know me for being in the middle of the fight and asking the questions afterwards than Kurt Busch going off on me because he doesn't deserve recognition for that. But anyway.
All right, fair enough. Shannon, I'm going to stick with you and then Jamie, I'll get back to you. The interesting thing about both of you, obviously, is that you're well established now in terms of NASCAR media. So whatever these issues would be, and I imagine they still exist, I would think have been at least a little mitigated because you are among the more experienced reporters on the beat, regardless of gender. That said, the sport itself is, as you know, is overwhelmingly male in terms of the people who participate in it, and the media base is overwhelmingly male in terms of who covers it. How has that impacted both of you during your NASCAR career? And this is just would be a guess of mine, that it was more impactful when you were young and new on the beat than maybe today. And I guess we'll start with you, Shannon.
I think it's funny because I think the NFL is like that too. I mean, there's no women playing on the field. There's no women coaches that I see. And in NASCAR, there are actually women engineers. There are women that work on the teams. There are women in the media center. I was really fortunate because I didn't have a motorsports background or, a motocross. I mean, Jamie was like a superstar. She had been in like a movie and, people knew who she was from Supercross. And I mean, here I come. I mean, no one knew who I was. And Marty Smith, who is one of my best friends, he and I started at ESPN. We were actually at Speed together. We did this show called Backseat Drivers back in the day. And it was so funny because we both knew nothing about television and I knew nothing about racing. But Marty was really patient with me and he really helped me when I first got into the garage, because being with him and having a friendship with him, I think people said, all right, she's cool. You know, she's cool. Come on. We'll, you know, here's this, here's that. But again, Richard, I wasn't afraid to say, hey, to a crew chief, do you mind like an extra 10 minutes if I come by after practice and kind of ask you what this is or ask you what this is? Because it's one thing to cover the emotions of a race. It's another thing to know like what the splitter is or, you know, how a track bar adjustment affects the car. It's a whole new dynamic to NASCAR. But Marty really held my hand and helped me through those first couple years. And, you know, then you get your feet underneath you and you establish a reputation of doing your best and working hard. I've always said this, that I believe 100% that hard work is genderless. I don't care if you're a guy or a girl, and I don't care what sport you're in. If you're a hard worker, that is recognized and that is respected. And even in basketball, when I would go to every practice or every shoot around and I would put in the time, coaches see that, SIDs see that. And I think for me, Jamie can certainly add to this. I mean, it's the respect that comes with the hard work.
Jamie, same question, and you could take that however you want.
Well, it's interesting. I being raised by a single mom, all I saw was my mom accomplishing things that she never thought she could ever do. She never said no to anything. She always said, yes, I'm up for the task. And that's all that I saw. So when I went into a sport that was male dominated, I was ballsy. I look back and say, how the hell did I do that? What was I thinking? But I pulled it off and here I am. Because I didn't see myself as, oh my God, I'm a girl in this garage and they're going to eat me alive. I just never looked at myself that way. For some reason, maybe it was an angel on my shoulder that just kept me digging and looking ahead, and it wasn't an issue for me ever. And I think that sometimes it is very helpful, especially when you're starting out to be a girl. Guys are more likely maybe to say, hey, can I help you out? Can I answer some questions? You know, sure, I'll talk to you when you want an interview. Sure, those things happen, and it's very nice to be the only female sometimes, but other times it is hard because not everybody is accepting of it at first, and especially when we started out in television. I mean, being one of the first females ever on television for X Games, for Supercross, Motocross, IndyCar, you name it, people aren't sure about it, and they look at you through an extra thick magnifying glass. They don't care. They look at the guys, oh, well, he's a guy. Of course he knows about racing. But this girl, I'm going to watch her. I'm going to listen. She slips up once, her credibility is out the window. So I think that's a blessing in disguise because it made me work harder, twice as hard, to prove myself to the fans at home that what they're seeing and what they're hearing from me is legit and I'm an equal to the men.
Shannon, as a sort of a general rule, how much sexism do you think exists in sports broadcasting?
I don't think I've ever experienced it. Like I said, I think that women can get, I think coaches, players, whatever, drivers, obviously they have different conversations with men than they have with women. But I don't feel like I don't get stories because I'm a woman. I don't feel like I don't get the information because I'm a woman. I don't feel like I'm judged by those guys, like I said, in the garage that see me there or on the sideline that see me there every single week and know that I'm putting in the time. I don't feel it from them. I'm sure that a lot of people experience it. I haven't. And I don't know, Jamie, I mean, I just feel like we've grown up in this garage. And, you know, when I was pregnant, and Jamie too, when we were pregnant in the garage, I mean, we're running around with an expandable fire suit on. Yeah, I'm 28 weeks pregnant with twins. And, you know, I never got frowned upon. I mean, people never, I don't think, judged me. Like, they wanted to help me. Hannah and Jamie, I'm sure that you feel the same way. Like, the crew guys would help you out. You'd have drivers. I never felt that. And that would probably be the time that you would feel it the most when you're, you know, all big and getting ready to have a kid.
Jamie?
Yeah. And, you know, I've noticed some differences maybe across the board in different sports. In NASCAR, I mean, what I do, I work in tennis shoes. That's my deal. I wear black pants, tennis shoes, and I'm just on pit road. I'm one of the guys. You dress for the part, right? You're working around mm-hmm. race cars. There's no need to be wearing high heels and a short skirt. Well, I find out, you know, I've talked to other women in other sports, and I see some of the texts that some of them have gotten at times or comments that they get from fans or whatnot. So I think it's interesting, different sports and how their fans see women. Sure, it exists. I think sexism exists out there, but I've never experienced it. But I've always told women who or girls that are growing up that want to do what I do, dress the part, be professional, don't sex it up, just be professional and you'll go to the top.
But, you know, for me, that's kind of evolved a little bit because when I was younger and I was trying to make my name and trying to earn the respect, man, I was wearing like turtlenecks and I was wearing, gosh, I look back on some of the stuff and I'm like, Lord, somebody should have dressed me. But now as I get older and I'm more secure in what I do, this is a visual medium. And if you go on Twitter after a race or after a game, I mean, the number one thing you're going to get is comments about your hair, your makeup, what you were wearing. And to me, like I tell young women this all the time, don't look at that because they're not talking about what questions you asked or how you did in this certain segment. They're talking about what you look like. And that has nothing to do with the role that you're playing and the job that you're doing. But I mean, as I've gotten older, I realize that it is it's a physical medium. And, you know, we like to look at, you know, I mean, that's why we watch TV. We like, you know, pretty pictures and we like things that look good. And so to me, I've evolved as I've gotten older where now I will wear a skirt or high heels, or like I said, sit in makeup for a while. And I'm okay. And I'm not, hey, it is what it is. This is what I'm doing. And I don't think that that's something I would have done when I was younger.
Shannon, I'll stick with you on that. How much do you think has the profession changed now where 20 years ago, the idea of a 50, 55-year-old woman hosting something would not exist? And by the way, that shouldn't have been the case. And we could probably have an hour discussion as to why that was, including still to this day, men mostly making those decisions. But in 2017, do you feel more, what's the sort of optimistic maybe is the word I'm looking for, that you can do what you're doing much later than maybe somebody who was born 20, 25 years before you?
Well, I mean, women weren't even allowed in locker rooms. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a time when they weren't. And, I mean, they every single step of the way, there have been women that have pushed this bubble and pushed the role of a female in sports. I mean, you look at Susie Culver, you look at Leslie Visser, you look at Hannah Storm, you look at these women that I grew up watching and still do and still respect so much because they're always pushing me to be better. But absolutely, I think if I want to be doing this when I'm 55, I mean, the thing for me personally is that my priorities have changed a little bit. I'm not hustling the way that I hustled to get every job or to do everything like I did when I was 25. I'm still working my butt off, but I have to have a little bit of a balance now because I have kids. And those are, I mean, that's important to me. That is the number one thing to me. So, but I feel like if I want to be doing this when I'm 50, 55 years old, absolutely. I have no doubt in my mind that I could continue to do this because I'm a hard worker, because I'm passionate. I build relationships with people. I feel like I have I feel like I've earned the respect of not only my colleagues, but people that are in this industry. And I hope to think that people like to work with me. And I think that those are all the most important things.
Jamie, how do you look at it again? I wish I knew the history of NASCAR better, but I don't know what the general speaking of the ages of pit reporters are, but how do you look at it as you head forward? I mean, can we see pit reporters who are in their 50s still doing what they did in their 20s and 30s?
Absolutely. I've worked with men in their 60s. I mean, if there's men doing it in their 60s, for sure. If I want to do it in my 60s, I bet I can. Like Shannon says, as long as you still have those relationships, people still like you. They still like to work with you. You still look decent. Yeah. I mean, it's all part of it. Like you said, it's a visual medium. Men, women, it doesn't matter. You can't lose yourself because you're getting up there in age. You need to keep it together. You need to still have the same work ethic and you know, carry yourself the same way that you always did. But another point to that, like Shannon said, women weren't allowed in locker rooms. I mean, just how many years ago? Not that long ago. Same thing with racetracks. Women weren't even allowed at the racetrack. There weren't even bathrooms for women not too long ago. So we haven't had a chance to really see women come up from their 20s, their 30s, still working and racing or football on the sidelines in their 50s and 60s. I think we're just starting to get to that point, and hopefully we're going to be the women showing that you can do it. If you want to stick to it, you want to have that job in your 50s, go for it.
All right, Jamie.
Hey, Richard, and realize, like, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, it's okay.
Realize, like, before myself and Jamie and Wendy Venturini and Krista Voda and Nicole Briscoe, like, there were no women on pit road running around pregnant. You know, like I said, we had expandable fire suits built. We have these packs that go around our waist with all of our microphones and all the stuff that we need in order to broadcast this race from the pits. We had to have a special thing made with a backpack, and that backpack we kind of passed along from one person to the next. I mean, this wasn't done. I remember I had a woman, Claire B. Lang, who has been in NASCAR for a really long time. She came up and told me this one time, and it meant the world to me. She's like, you know, you guys are doing things that we haven't seen. For you to be running around, calling pit stops, run into the garage. I mean, we weren't really running, but it was more like a fast walk at some point. But I mean, hey, we did it. And I don't know if we were trying to prove a point. Maybe that's what Jamie and I do because of our upbringing, and we always feel like we have to prove something. But I mean, we did it, and we made it through our pregnancies. Sure, there were some nights where I'd be in the back of the car on the way back from the racetrack crying to Jamie because I felt like I should be at home nesting and my emotions were going crazy. But we did it. And the next generation of women that come up and work in racing, it's not going to be an issue. They're just going to go and they're going to do it.
I'm going to stick with the this. I would have gotten to this later, but I'll stick with it. By the way, Claire B. Lang is awesome. First lady of NASCAR radio.
Amazing.
She is. Hardest working woman in the garage, hands
for sure.
Yeah. So you brought up, Shannon, I'll stick with you. You brought up motherhood. You are both mothers of two. Shannon, you have twin 6-year-old boys. Jamie, I think you have a daughter and a son. Am I right about that?
Yes, a 4-year-old son and a 3-month-old daughter.
And a 3-month-old daughter. Okay, so Jamie, let's start with you for a second. What you do is a very grueling job in terms of travel, and then in terms of your actual job, My God, I'm just looking at this post-race brawl between Gordon and Keselowski that you're in the middle. By the way,
yeah.
that's now 1.3 million on YouTube, so congratulations on that.
Jamie's taller than all of them.
She is. Looks like she's like 5'10 or something like that. So good job.
I am, exactly.
Good job by your parents, Jamie. Good genetics. But Jamie, what's interesting there is that that's a true balancing act. I mean, you have a tiny baby at home. You must work it, obviously, with your husband, but how do you navigate between a job that is, that really you have to travel? I mean, you have to go to these tracks. There's no way around it. You can't do your hosting job from Studio X. So how have you been able to manage the balancing act between being a mother of a newborn and having this job, which takes you across the country weekly?
A lot of energy, a lot of coffee, a lot of working out.
And a great husband.
It's a juggling act. Yes, that's what it comes down to. It's my husband and I are a team. That's the only way this could happen. That's the only way this could be possible. And it's funny, Richard, because I mean, still to this day, people are like, oh, you're still traveling. The kids don't come with you. So who watches your kids? Do you have a nanny? I'm like, no. I mean, I'm out here on the road busting my butt. My husband has a role, and he's home taking care of our kids, making sure that they're being brought up right and not by a stranger. That's our agreement. That's how we work. And he's amazing. He's better with two kids than I am, but they're actually down here in Daytona with me right now. And it's such a blessing, but it's a lot to balance because mommy mode is a lot different than work mother. And, you know, you go back and forth emotionally. Sometimes it can get tough. It gets tough just trying, like when we started this podcast, to be honest, I was in the car with two kids that were at Disney all day, and I was praying to God that they wouldn't start crying. So you just make it happen. And it's the excitement of life. And in NASCAR, everybody has kids, and it makes you more relatable to them. I ran into Tony Stewart at Disney today and Clint Bowyer, and you know, there's kids, Boyer's got two kids. It's a big family. And that kind of helps it when you're on the road and you're missing your kids so much.
How's that 3 months sleeping? Cause that could obviously be the difference between you sleeping and never sleeping.
Oh yes. She is great. We focus on that 100%. So yes, she's sleeping, and that means mommy's getting sleep, and I'm getting back to myself. And of course, you know, I had to get on the road when she was back on the road to work when she was 5 weeks old. And I did the same with my son. So you just do it. It's not always easy, but it's damn rewarding, I have to say.
All right, Shannon, you have twin boys. I am the father of a twin boy and a girl. The fact that you have twin boys, God bless you, because my son is at the moment he literally can't stop touching everything. I mean, my mother is a shrink, and I seriously, you're sort of screwed up if your parents are shrinks, but my little kid now he's destroyed me because he will not stop literally discovering everything every second. So the fact that you have two of these people, I don't know how you do it. So the same question, but yet you have had to deal with both the blessing and the and sometimes the pain of twins. How have you done that?
Yeah, it's like, don't touch this.
Right.
And then what do they do? They touch it.
Right. Yeah. And they smile at you and they're really cute, but you're like, what did you just do? What did we just talk about?
How old are your twins now?
My twins are 2.5 now.
Oh my goodness. Wow. You're just getting into the fun.
Yeah, I mean, some would call it fun. Others would call it negotiating with people who can't be negotiated with, right?
Yeah, I would say right around the age of 6 is when it starts to get fun. So you got a little bit of time.
All right, great.
I've said this to a mom. I think Wendy Venturini. I said, if you want it all, you have to do it all. And I remember, so I lived in New York for a while, as you already mentioned, and I was there for September 11th. And I remember just being grinding it out at that time. And I remember, I'm sure that you were there, Richard, all the missing signs that were up all around New York City. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I wonder how many of those people put off having a family or put off getting married or put off a vacation or put off whatever because they wanted to make executive before they did it, or they wanted to make this much money before they did it. And I thought about all the people that didn't come home that day. And it was really life-changing for me at that point in my life when I was, you know, 25, 26, brand new, just doing everything I can to make a dollar. And I realized at that time, like, if I was going to do this, like, I was not going to let it, my personal life sacrifice. So when I decided to have kids, it was like all in. Now, I didn't expect to have twins. I thought I would have one and I could travel with the baby and do all of these things. And when I was told that I was having twins, there were a couple of four-letter words used at that point because I was scared. I didn't know what we were going to do. Fortunately, I had the boys in the off season, so they were in the hospital. Were your twins premature?
No, actually, my wife carried almost a term, which was a minor miracle, basically. Yeah.
So I was able to spend some time with the boys when they were in the hospital in the NICU for 5 weeks.
Wow.
But it's a balance, and I've been really, really lucky because I have every year tried to bring, since they were about 2 years old, I split it up and bring one of my sons out on the road with me at one time, and then I bring another kid out on the road with me at another time. And so whether it's NASCAR, I think I've done it at like the driving races, so Talladega, Atlanta. And in basketball, I swear I've brought my kids to more Kentucky Wildcat games than I think that they know. I think that they think that they're related to the Wildcat. And the coaches are great. They let them sit there during shoot around. I'll get a babysitter to hang out in the stands with them while the game is on. But it's cool to bring them on the road with me. But home life is a balance because I'm still volunteering at their school once or twice a week. I'm still going to lunch with them. I'm still making lunches. I'm still setting up doctor's appointments, setting up this, babysitters. Homework is the big thing for me right now because they've come so far over the last 6 months that it's like, I mean, I am with them reading and doing all of these things. So like I said, my priorities, 12 out of 12 on a spelling test for me right now, I'm through the roof. And it's that means more to me than some other things that used to, because they're my kids. It's a balance. It's hard. And, you know, I remember Jamie when she first came out on the road after having Carter, and the look in her eyes, I remember seeing it. And I remember thinking, I've been there, because it's just pure mommy guilt. And it's something that we all deal with. But like I said, if you want it all, you're going to do it all. And you're going to figure out how to do it, because it is possible.
Shannon, it doesn't sound like you're getting more than 6 hours of sleep a night. Maybe you are.
I'm a glutton. I throw in these Ironman events that I train for, these Ironman events. And so 70.3. So I'm up on the bike at like 4:30 in the morning, getting a workout in, getting a pool swim in, or getting a run in, whenever I can. So yeah, I'm just wired differently than I think most people.
That's impressive. God bless you. Jamie, this would be like the worst segue ever, but I'll do it regardless. Jamie, one of the things that in talking to the people who cover NASCAR at my place, I had asked them, I said, you know, what are some interesting questions that you would have for Jamie and Shannon, given that, you know, you cover this stuff? And one of the things that is a guy named Drew Lawrence. One of the things that he came up with, which I thought was really interesting, was how do you find the right balance on providing the viewers with technical information versus not overwhelming them with technical information? And the interesting thing to me about this, Jamie, is that the NASCAR fan, much like the soccer fan, I think probably expects to there's an expectation of how much they already know. So you don't want to dumb it down. At the same time,
right,
in order for the sport to grow, right, you have to have new people come to the sport. So how do you weigh that? Because you deal with a lot of very technical things sometimes if something happens to one of these cars.
Yeah, and it's really easy to try to go down that road, especially when you're earlier in your career, because you want to show everybody what you know. But when you realize it and you sit back and you work on such a big broadcast team like Fox, we have professional analysts, crew chiefs, drivers who've just gotten out of the race car, like Jeff Gordon. That's what their role is, to explain what these things are, to go dig deeper, to explain technically what's under that hood or what's happening with the tires, what's happening inside when the driver's flipping that switch. My job is to tell stories about the driver outside of the car, inside the car, what he's saying, what he's thinking, what he's feeling. That's my job. So I try to keep it like that. This is what I'm here to do. That's what those analysts in the booth are doing. And sure, things happen on pit road. You have to understand what's going on. You explain it to the fan. You break it down without dumbing it down. And yes, sometimes it is hard to balance. But for me, I just like to keep it simple. I like to tell stories about these guys, what's happening this weekend, get people emotionally invested so that they want to watch the race and they want to see where this guy finishes.
Shannon, the interesting thing about obviously NASCAR racing at the highest level is there's always going to be drivers who have a very sort of slim shot of winning that race. But in the, you know, for both of you, this would apply to both you and Jamie, but particularly you if you're hosting. How do you sort of decide how much prep you do on some of these non-Jimmy Johnson drivers who likely will not win, but what happens in the if it's the 1 in 1,000 shot that they actually win that race?
Well, I think the good thing about racing is you really live it. I mean, you are on the road with these guys. It's the same guys in the race every single week. So you do get to know their faces and you get to be very familiar with them. And I am, I am not a person who takes prep work lightly. I am all in. Like I said, I hate it if I miss something. I don't like being, you know, I don't like being unprepared for things. I feel very lost if I am. So I'm going to study as much as I can and learn as much as I can. And, you know, Jamie and I, when we started in what was then the Nationwide Series and now the Xfinity Series. And there were a lot of drivers in that series. I mean, Brad Keselowski was in that series and not a lot of people knew who he was. And there were a lot of names. And I think with that, you know, kind of that background for me, everybody has a story, and I think that there are really cool ones. Sometimes you don't have enough time for it in a broadcast, but you never know. You might be able to work it in. And you got, I mean, I'm prepared for anything when I go out there. I want to know all the guys that are running, you know, all of their stats. I mean, Jamie was talking about the stats. We shared that last year, and it would be like 60 pages of stuff. And, you know, sometimes you don't use some of the stuff, but it's there if you need it. And I don't want to not be prepared the one time that I need it.
Jamie, there are certain... Well, I'm sorry, Jamie. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, and I was going to say, we're self-producing ourselves out there. As a pit reporter, nothing's scripted. You're self-producing. There's a story that you get. Boom, you go on the air. Your producers are trusting you that you are going somewhere that makes sense and that it's accurate. And so it's up to us to bring those faces that aren't Jimmy Johnson's, that aren't running at the front of the pack, to bring those to the screen. Give, you know, our director a reason to put the camera on this car. So we have to go out, try to find time to talk to some of these guys that are running maybe mid-pack, running in the back maybe 20th, 25th, sometimes 30th, to talk to them to say, what's going on in your life? What's going on with the race team? To try to get a nugget or two so that when time allows on the broadcast, you can sell that little nugget. They can get a camera on them. Their sponsors get popped. People can see the picture of this guy and maybe root for him because he's an underdog. So that's our responsibility, and I don't take it lightly for sure.
This is for either of you. I think there are certain sports where, and you both know this from having worked at ESPN, where they really want a separation between the people who are broadcasting the sport and the people within the sport. Then there are other sports, I think like tennis and NASCAR, where there are going to be analysts who used to drive for crew chiefs who are still currently working, or they still have financial relationships with the people they're covering. This happens in tennis too. I guess I'll start with you, Jamie. I mean, do we just have to sort of accept that there is inevitably going to be conflicts in NASCAR and that we shouldn't treat that the way maybe other sports are covered? Or should we get to the place where there really are none of these conflicts and you try to be as independent as you possibly can?
Things have definitely changed, and they've changed in the years that I've covered NASCAR and just, you know, since 2007. I remember coming in with ESPN, and here was Rusty Wallace as an analyst, and he owned a team in the Xfinity Series, which was the Nationwide Series then. And I remember my bosses at ESPN having communication and conversations about how we're going to deal with this. Then, of course, we had Brad Doherty, who was part owner in a team in the Cup Series. And these were conversations, and I would sit back and watch, and I would get offers to go speak for somebody or do a commercial for somebody, and ESPN would not let me do it because they saw it as a conflict because it was competing. It was a sponsor or a name that was competing in NASCAR. Well, nowadays, that line is totally blurred, and I personally don't see a problem with it when it's done professionally. Like Jeff Gordon, he's an owner. He owns Jimmy Johnson's number 48 race car. And yes, he's calling the races to all the other competitors. Jeff Gordon just got out of the 24 car. Chase Elliott's on the pole for the Daytona 500. We have to all trust that Jeff Gordon is going to look at that. And sure, he's going to make it known that he's in his heart, he roots for that car. But at the same time, he's going to give equal opportunity to the competitors around him. And I think he proved that last year that he can do it. And when that happens, I think people realize, okay, this guy might own this or own that, or she might have an affiliation over here. It's okay. I'm still getting what I need out of the broadcast, and they're not being biased.
That's an interesting answer. Shannon, as sort of a fundamentalist, it bothers me on a fundamental level. I do appreciate very much the transparency, though, that exists. And I agree with Jamie in that I thought Jeff Gordon did a really good job, given what his relationships are. How do you see this? I, if nothing else, I thought Jamie really sort of gave you at least the argument as to why the world that we live in now, and you have to trust your people to be professionals.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked Ohio State games with Chris Spielman. I've worked Colorado games with Joel Klatt, you know, and that's obviously they have ties to those schools. And, you know, they get off air, and certainly there are going to be people that are thinking that they're rooting for their, you know, former school, but they're professionals. And they go in, and I've worked with people who, act, I mean, this is a conversation that we will have before the game where they don't want, they get nervous about how they're going to do it because they don't want it to seem like they are favoring one team over the other. We're professionals. We have, this is their job. Their paychecks aren't getting, you know, signed by the school that they went to. Certainly they have ties and they like to see them win, but they have to walk that line, and they have to be fair, and they know that. And I think they're professionals. We're all at this level at, you know, whether it be ESPN or Fox Sports or NBC or TNT or whatever, for a reason. And that's because they do a good job and they can walk that line when they're in those situations.
All right. I'm going to keep you for about 10 more minutes. And this is really interesting to me, so I appreciate the time. Jamie and Shannon, you should answer this as well, given all your experience in the pit. Jamie, what is it like to, because most of us who have covered sports don't really have to contemplate this possibility, but what is it like to sort of contemplate every week that in the worst and most horrible case, there is a potential that you could be covering a death?
I've done it. I've been there a couple of times. And it was, to me, the hardest day ever on the job, but it also was the day that showed my true strength and ability as a reporter. And that was in 2011 when Dan Weldon, IndyCar driver, was killed, and I was covering the race, and I just so happened to be really good friends with Dan. I knew him well. I knew him for years, and he was a bright spot in that sport, in motorsports in general. The race had just started. We've all seen it. He crashes. I'm sent to the infield care center to interview drivers coming out that had seen what happened. And the looks on their faces, they all knew what had happened. They were changed forever. And then I got the word that I had to go to the hospital at UMC Trauma Center in Las Vegas, in my hometown, mind you, where my dad used to be a surgeon there. And I'm reporting on the death of a driver, and I'm looking at his wife with his infant son and his two-year-old son at the same time. And I somehow had the strength to keep it together, to report the facts, and then not only to do that, but for the next 48 hours, literally on no sleep, going on CNN and Today's Show and Good Morning America to talk about the man that he was, to talk about safety issues in the sport and initiatives. And that was definitely the darkest and hardest day of my life. And I'm glad you asked that, because that goes back to that question about having a family. I was married at the time for a year, and sure, we wanted to have kids, but we didn't have a set plan. It, you know, is any time ever the perfect time to have kids? Well, when Dan was killed, it was literally that moment that I said, I don't care how or when or what, we have to start trying to have children now, because we may not be able to do it. And I want to have that all. Seeing that loss in Dan made me want to be a better person. It made me want to be a mother and a better reporter. And lo and behold, I got pregnant just a few months later and had my son. So I have a lot to thank Dan for that. And it was definitely the hardest thing to ever do. And living in that every day and covering a sport that you know it can happen, although, you know, it's very, very slim chances that that will happen, because safety has come so far in racing now.
I appreciate you sharing that, Jamie. Shannon, have you had any kind of similar occasion where either you've had to cover a death, or if nothing else, you certainly have been at the track many times where this possibility exists?
Yeah, I think, and, you know, I can even, you know, talk about the football side of it, particularly college football. I remember just this past year, I did a game and they had the kid, they took him off and they were drilling his helmet off of him. And, you know, he's on the ground. And I think you just have to take a deep breath. And you, for me personally, I just remind myself that I am the only voice that this boy's mom, aunt, uncle, grandma, grandfather, dad, brother, girlfriend, whatever. I'm the voice that they're going to hear. And they're going to hear what I'm seeing, maybe before they even get a call from the coach or the athletic trainer. And so I try to think about, put myself in their situation and think about what kind of voice I would want to hear coming through that television screen. I would want someone who, you know, gives me the facts. I would want someone who doesn't scare me because I don't know how bad it is. And so I feel, and listen, it's not some, the first time I'm sure I completely effed it up. You know, I'm sure that I messed up and didn't know what I was saying and got nervous and stumbled all over myself and probably did it the wrong way. But I think to me, those are the moments where you have to pull it together because the people that are listening, to me, that's the most important thing. What are they thinking when they're sitting on the couch? What are they hearing? And what is the fear that they're going through?
All right, as we finish up here, go ahead, Jamie.
I was going to say, I have to give credit to ESPN for preparing me and the role that I've been in and the three times I have covered a death on the air. Sure, like Shannon said, when it first happens, you don't know how you're going to respond, but you hope that your automatic reaction is the way that it's intended, and that's because it comes from the network that you work for and their preparation and putting you through meetings, and this is how you handle a serious injury. They did that. They did a hell of a job in helping coach us as reporters. And I give all the credit to their system and the way that they developed me, in covering great things and in covering the worst things.
Jamie, what's
one of the things
process?
I know you like the process, Richard, but one of the things that is always at the top of my to-do list that when I'm getting ready for any event, and I tell young reporters this who call me for advice about being on the sidelines, is I always ask the SID, you know, do you have an x-ray facility on site? And if a player has to be transported to a hospital, what is the hospital that they have to be transported to? How far is it? Which way will they take them? Because to me, those are all things that you can kind of get out of the way, that you're not scrambling. Like the SID at that moment doesn't want to be answering questions about what hospital they're going to be taking this player to. They have things that they have to do. And so for me, once again, it's the preparation and it's a process for me to kind of get those things and have those things. I think it's really important because it makes those panicked situations and those situations that seem like they're out of control a little bit more in control for someone who's trying to do their job.
All right, here are the final two for me. We'll start with you, Jamie. What, if anything, is the biggest difference between working at Fox and working at ESPN?
At ESPN, I feel like, at least in the years I was there, it's not about you. It's not about the personalities. You were there to cover a game. You're there to cover a race, whatever it may be. The star are the players and the drivers and that sport. And I love their approach. It's the only way I knew for 13 years. And when I came over to Fox, all of a sudden, they celebrate you as a reporter as well. You're a personality. You're part of it. You're the voice and the face that we're seeing. We want to show you. You're on camera. We're doing a two shot here. Your name is going up on there as well because you're a big part of it. No, you're not the driver. You're not the star, but you're part of it. And they just have a different philosophy in that way. And it took a little getting used to for me. I'm not going to lie. All of a sudden, I wasn't wearing a fire suit, covering up with this, you know, with my name on there. All of a sudden, it's like you can wear your own clothes, whatever your style is. Show your personality and be you. We hired you because you're good at what you do. Now show your personality and be you. And that was a big change for me, and I love it. It was the perfect place to go from ESPN to Fox for me.
Jamie, before Shannon answers that, do you prefer one or the other? Do you feel like you fit better now at Fox than you might have at ESPN, given stylistically?
If I started out at Fox, I probably wouldn't have fit in the same. I love the transition. I think now that I'm older, I love the fact that they trust me to show my personality and my own style. Whereas at ESPN, I was so darn young, I didn't have a style. Like Shannon, I was wearing turtlenecks trying to cover up. Like, look at me, hear me, but don't see that I'm actually all girl. So I think it was, ESPN was perfect at my life, you know, in that time. And now Fox is perfect for this moment in my life.
And Shannon, it's going to be a little bit different for you, obviously, because it's your Fox responsibilities are different than what your ESPN responsibilities were. And you left ESPN for that particular reason, for the opportunity. But given all that, what have you found to be different about the two employers?
Well, like Jamie said, I mean, certainly, I mean, I love that you said an adjustment because, I mean, I think it is. It's a huge adjustment. I wouldn't be where I am in my career without ESPN, without all of the reps, without, you know, being on the 8 o'clock, the 9 o'clock, the 10 o'clock, the 11 o'clock, the 12 o'clock. I mean, because it's all day, right? I mean, they're servicing SportsCenter and they're servicing all of those entities. You know, to me, I kind of think about it this way. Like it's, there's less people. Richard, you know, at Fox, there's less people, there's less content there, so there's certainly a more relaxed atmosphere. If you're at a huge party and there's 5,000 people at the party, a party that just has 30 or 40 people is going to be a lot different, right? And that's kind of how I feel. It's just a little bit more, a lot more relaxed. We were down in Pearl Harbor for a basketball tournament, and, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, every morning, we're on a surfboard with like a bunch of my colleagues and some executives, and we're surfing. And, you know, whether, you know, we wouldn't do that at ESPN because there's just so many people and you're moving around, or because you had to, like I said, you had to do a 9 o'clock hit or a 10 o'clock hit or an 11 o'clock hit. It's just a different vibe. And I feel very lucky and very blessed to be here right now. That the executives have been great. You know, we talked about it when I first made the move. We talked about the doors that have opened for me to do different things that I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do at ESPN because those roles are already filled. And it's been fantastic. I love it at Fox Sports.
I'm going to frame this as ESPN hates surfing, Shannon. That's basically what I'm taking from that from that answer.
It was a lot of fun.
All right, here's the final one. Here's the final one, Jamie. In the next let's say 15 to 24 months, what's a story that you really want to do that you haven't yet done?
Oh boy. That's a tough one. So many stories. Everything that I think of and want to do, we pretty much cover it on the air. Gosh,
I'll give you a chance to keep thinking. Shannon, same question for you. And if you want to go away from NASCAR, you can, obviously, given your college responsibilities in NFL.
A story or an event?
Either or. That's very. I'm open-ended.
I can tell you what's on my bucket list.
Sure.
You know,
every time the
swimmers get out of the pool at the Olympics and they're dropping chlorine on Michelle Tafoya, I think to myself, my God, because I was a swimmer when I was growing up. And so I would love to be part of that event. I mean, I would just go and like hold her mic for her because I just, for me, I'm a swimmer, and everything that those men and women do when they jump in that pool, from the, you know, pure focus to, you know, breath control, to everything. That is a bucket list item for me to do.
Murdoch has a lot of money. I'm not sure he has enough money to buy from NBC until 2032.
I'll go there and just hold her mic.
Yeah, just to email Tafoya and say, Michelle, do you need a production assistant for this week?
There you go.
Jamie, has anything popped to mind as you, and it doesn't, yeah, by the way, so it doesn't have to be NASCAR for you. If there's some bucket list that's away from NASCAR, that's interesting too.
Yeah, and again, this is an NBC property, but I would love to do the Kentucky Derby because I'm a horse girl. Absolutely love it. I want to be that horseback riding reporter that's running with
Donna Barton Brothers. I love that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Fantastic. I would love to do that, and I would also love one day to do the double, the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 in one day. And my bosses at Fox have backed me and told me that one day, if there's a driver that does it, that they will definitely take into account and think about it. So I would love to do that.
That's cool. I would love to see you do that. That'd be a really interesting broadcasting story. All right, let me go through the bios again. And Lord knows, between you two, there's a lot here. Jamie Little covers pit road for the NASCAR Cup Series and NASCAR Affinity Series. She's also a reporter for NASCAR Race Day. That's FS1's pre-race show. She's in Daytona now. You will see her on Fox's coverage. You may even be listening to this after the Daytona 500. So if that is the case, then you saw her on Fox's coverage. Shannon Spake joined Fox last July. She works in NASCAR, college football, college basketball, and the NFL. And this month, she was named the co-host alongside Adam Alexander of FS1's NASCAR Race Hub. She also hosts NASCAR Race Day Xfinity. I'm really glad I did this. You guys have both really, really interesting jobs, and I really admire how you both approach this. So I wish you the best of luck, and thank you very much, Jamie and Shannon, for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard, and I love what you do. I follow you, and a lot of media insiders definitely told me to follow you months ago, so I started, and I'm glad I did. So thank you for having me on.
You got it. Thank you.
And Richard, I we need to get you. Loudoun is not that far of a drive from New York City, and I really, really, really think that you would find it fascinating to come down and see what goes into, not only from a pit road standpoint and the spotters and everything that goes on, but even maybe sitting in the truck and kind of seeing what that whole thing. Our TV compound every week at a NASCAR race is like the Super Bowl. It's incredible that the traveling circus that we have from that aspect. And I think that could be fascinating to you.
Forget Loudoun, Shannon. I'd like to just see you with those 6-year-olds, because it seems like you know what the hell you're doing, to be very honest.
Well, bring the twins, and I'll bring the twins. What's really cool about racing is you hear people say this all the time, that it's a family, but the drivers and their wives and their kids are 200 yards off of the track in the motorhome lot. They have a traveling, it's called MRO, Motor Racing Outreach. They have like a traveling playground that they bring where when I brought my kids to the races before, I can drop them off there and they can play all day. And so it is a family. And I mean, Jamie has brought her kid on the road with her before. And so it's a lot. So you can bring the kids to the race, get them some baby bands, headphones, and we'll get the twins together sometime.
All right, it may happen. All right, might be a couple of years, but I'm gonna file that. Jamie and Shannon, thank you very much, and all of us will be watching you on Fox. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, back in the studio really quick. My thanks to Jamie Little and Shannon Spake for their time and honesty. I enjoyed that. I spent 1 8-week period many moons ago covering NASCAR. I went to 6 tracks and did a big NASCAR fan survey for Sports Illustrated. Interviewed 1,000 people. That was the assignment, to get just a whole sense of what the NASCAR fan at that time was like. It might have been like 2001 or 2005 or something like that. But it was really interesting. Incredibly great people. They were so inviting and far different than you might think. Primarily still a Southern sport, but whatever your stereotypes are, NASCAR fans, it is not necessarily true. I mean, I met some PhDs when I was in Sonoma. You know, trust me, I met the wine and cheese crowd. It was interesting. And obviously, you know, when I was in Charlotte and some other places, some absolute Southerners who grew up with the sport, and the Richard Pettys and the David Pearsons. But it's a really interesting sport to me. I wish I had spent more time at the track after that, but that was my sort of extent of it, these 6 tracks in 8 weeks. But I'm really glad I got to experience that. Lou Pellegrino has taken off, so it's the great Sean Cherry who will be producing this podcast, and I thank him. For everybody at Digital Media, as well as Sports Illustrated, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.